Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate, a podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the KP Podcast. We're coming to you from the Forum with the KP Studios. I am Pete Kamboukos here with Keith Anderson. And guys, we have got a big story that just broke here. So, Keith, what are we talking about today?
Well, we were out trick-or-treating, and then we wake up, you know, with a candy high over the last couple of days. And then we realize that entire organizations in the iBuyer industry is shutting down.
Yeah.
Is it
big news? For those that may not have heard, Zillow Offers is no more.
And this is one of the top five, or maybe top three national iBuying cash offer programs that we've seen launch. And they were probably one of the later ones to the party. And so we see them come and then go fairly quickly, actually. And they didn't have as long of a push as we probably thought that we were going to see. So this comes as a shocker to all of us, as we've seen iBuyers continue to make a push in the industry. To see this is real shocking news.
Yeah, I think Zillow Offers, like you said, definitely one of the big three.
Yeah.
And I think they were in it about 3 years or so. So not very long here, you know.
No.
But for those of you that you know, I'm sure most people by this point have heard the story. But if you haven't, let's give everybody the quick recap on it. So Zillow, a couple of weeks ago, first announced that they were going to pause their home purchases through Zillow Offers through the end of the year. And then yesterday, CEO came out November 2nd, as we're recording this here, following day, and said that they are shutting down Zillow Offers for good. So went from a pause to we are getting out of the iBuyer business. And so now the Zillow Offers is no more. And so they've got currently roughly, you know, about 9,800 homes nationally that they've got to unwind. And I think, you know, the CEO said whatever is still in the queue, people they've already committed to and they've gotten past the certain process, they're going to finish those out. And so it looks like they'll probably still have sales they're finishing out through the end of the year as they're unwinding, you know, what they've got in their inventory now, but nothing new. And it's going away going forward.
They just gave us the basic sports story where you put a player on IR and then you say, just kidding, they're out for the year.
They're out for the year.
And so
actually it was more like that's career ending.
They're retiring.
Career ending injury.
Which is what we've been waiting for Ben Roethlisberger to do for quite some time here.
Man.
So just a little shout. But this is like serious out here, guys. This is something that we look for and we try and see where industries are going, where they're heading, what's happening in our industry, what that pulse is. And so today we want to dissect what this means for Phoenix, what this means for the country, what this means for other iBuyers, investors out there, as well as real estate agents, the public consumer as a whole. Is this related to the industry or is it just related to Zillow as a company? Like we're going to jump into all this stuff. When we see news like this, it can get a little confusing at first, and it's easier when you start to look at all the details and what it's come from and start to look at what the CEO and the company has cited as being the big issues. You start to dissect a little bit better. So let's jump into it right now, Pete.
Yeah.
Is this an issue that arrived from Zillow? Or did the market lead it? What caused this?
Well, I think before we talk about that, I think it's important to talk about what happened exactly, you know, that kind of led to that. And so, you know, you look at partly of what Zillow themselves were saying when they came out initially 2 weeks ago and said that they were putting them on pause. You know, the statement that came with it was that, or the information, I guess, that we heard with it was that they're having a labor shortage and that, you know, they couldn't get the work done on these. They couldn't get them back to market on time and things were, you know, they were backlog and overwhelmed. And so, you know, they were going to put it on pause to kind of catch that up. Well, fast forward to today. And now we hear them say, well, actually, yes, that was part of it. But in addition to that, you know, their algorithm was not able to accurately predict these prices, you know, over the next 4 to 6 months, which is the period that they're looking at to flip these homes. And that the algorithm was off by a lot more, you know, than what they had really originally anticipated. And so, you know, taking all those factors in, they just said, you know what, this is much harder to predict, much more volatile than we were expecting, and we're getting out of this portion of the business. Now, you know, the markets that they're in, I think, 24 markets with the iBuyer program across the country. But their biggest markets in this, you know, Phoenix is one of their bigger markets, but you've got like San Diego, Houston, Dallas, Atlanta. Those are their primary. That's where they were buying, you know, the most amount of homes. And so you've got a lot of hot markets. I mean, all of those were very hot markets. And so I think one thing to keep in mind, too, is part of what they're saying, you know, with this algorithm and the markets that they're in, they're not selling all of these necessarily at a loss, because that's a big of the headline out there is, well, they're selling all of these at a loss. They are selling at a loss, you know, overall. I know here in Phoenix, for example, we're looking at, I think the numbers they were putting out is about 10% of the homes, I believe, wow, we're going to be selling at a loss here locally or whatever.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because they come out, they talk about it being a Zillow thing. Hey, it's on us. We don't have the manpower to push this type of a business. And so all of us were like, okay, that makes sense. Zillow, you're a marketing company. Your biggest focus is the consumer and staying in front of the consumer. But then to throw in that detail,
of course, I was going to say everybody, including us at the time, go, but what else is going on?
Come on, tell us.
That's what you're saying, but what else is going on?
And so then we get the little dabble that we were hoping for. We get the last little news story of also the market is a little iffy or unpredictable in our eyes. And so this is kind of where we want to shed some light on it as well. And it is a very volatile market. We've seen this movement, these price increases over the last year. We've seen last 5 years in all respects, but the last year more actively moving in certain markets. But we still see a lot of these other companies standing true to what they're trying to do. So it makes you wonder, with this being a market issue, how much of that was their concern, or was it, you know, are we talking 50-50? Are we talking 75%? They were out of their own lane, and 25% they had market worries.
Yeah, well, let's talk about exactly kind of the things that they were doing when they were buying. And just to clarify, you know, we talk about the Phoenix market, you know, and we said they have about 9,800 homes nationally. Phoenix market only has, you know, we've got approximate numbers, about 250, 300 of those homes or so. So it's not, you know, a huge number of the inventory that they've got. But nationally, they've got a lot more to unwind in certain markets, and about 2/3 of those will be sold at a loss, you know, nationally. So Phoenix itself has a few number of homes that they're going to be selling, and a fewer number that are going to be selling at a loss. But overall, they've got a bigger number with a lot more homes that are going to be selling at a loss. But touching into like you said, what were they doing when they were buying? Like, what led to this? So first off, you guys all know out there, we've had a crazy, you know, market, even manias at some point over the last year and a half here. We had this, you know, COVID pandemic, the things we've talked about that caused these migrations and rates coming low, populations shifting across the country, sales and appreciation skyrocketing in certain areas. We've had, you know, podcasts you guys can go back and listen as to why some of that was happening, what caused some of that, where were we at with inventory. But here you've got Zillow buying right in the middle of this super hot market, using their own data, using their own algorithms to try to predict what's going on. But you've got, you know, the key word there is their algorithms. So you've got computers looking at this data, and you've got appreciation skyrocketing. You've got inventory that's record low, and you've got this computer going, well, you know, who knows how that algorithm works, but if they're looking at what's happened over the last 6 months or a year and trying to use that to project, you know, what's going to happen over the last 6 months, yeah, that's probably not going to be very accurate.
But it just doesn't make a ton of sense in my mind, because we're talking about the market where we've moved up 20%+ in certain areas. Mm-hmm. Like, you're talking about, how hard is it to miss that bad? Like, how bad does your algorithm have to be working in order to miss at that extreme of a level, to still sell houses at a loss in this market where we're climbing at that
right
high of a pace. I just, like, that blows my mind. If you buy a house 2 months ago, mm-hmm. we're seeing 3 to 5% appreciation sometimes over 60, 90 days.
Mm. But you're seeing also what, and I'll call this is an example of what not to do when flipping, right?
And put that into like effect and buy it at that thought process.
So this is what we do. So I can tell you guys, you know, having been in this business for many years and gone through the last crash, and we talk about this and we've been talking about it for the last several years with people that are newer to flipping and things like that. The deal has to make sense when you buy it, assuming the market, you know, is not going to continue to appreciate, yeah, because at that point you're just speculating.
Yeah, as so, if you sold it that day.
Yeah, does it cash flow this day? Can I turn around and sell it immediately? You know, if I'm flipping it and being the positive, the deal has to make sense day one. Now, what you see with a lot of these iBuyers, and frankly, you know, a lot of our clients and ourselves have been taking advantage of the last 6 months, they're, or even further, they're buying, you know, way above what that market yep. was. So they're trying to predict what's coming in the future, and they're buying it based on the fact that this market's going to keep going. And, you know, most of these iBuyer, your Zillows, your Open Doors, your OfferPads, now they've got deep pockets and a lot of funding.
Yeah.
So they can take some of these speculations. But again, I'll go back to, this is 101 of what not to do when flipping a house. You can't buy something and say, well, market's been ripping for the last 6 months. You know, if it keeps going for the next 6 months, we're all going to be okay. And I think that's part of what is happening with their, or was happening with their algorithm, is they're buying way above market, mm-hmm. way above what somebody could go out there. And we have other realtors and investors that we knew in other parts of the country who, for the first time ever, were going, man, I can sell this to Zillow or Open Door or OfferPad or one of these guys, and they're going to give me more than I could get going anywhere to market.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's funny. I mean, I've had conversation. I mean, being having a good pulse on the industry, we've had conversation with the other iBuyer programs, including Zillow and all of these. And the same procedure happens. They take that appreciation into effect with these offers. They have yeah. to. That's why these offers are higher than what it seems. And, you know, to give you kind of a good frank example, let's say the house is worth $90,000 today. But they can look at it and say, based on what we're seeing trends-wise, that house is going to be worth $100,000 in 2 months. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're looking at. So we're going to give a $100,000 offer today when it's only worth $90,000 and make it seem, that seems like a fantastic offer, which in reality, if you put it on the market and you pushed advertising, it might bump up to $100,000 just with general competition and things. So they might not be completely out of the park there. But the difference is, they're taking it into effect, hoping that in 60 days it's worth that. And we don't know which way the market's moving, but they're charging all those fees that a real estate agent would charge, or all the commissions and the closing costs that's there. And they're looking at their profit margin as that 5-6% middle ground fee in between that.
Plus ancillary services. That's an important yes. thing about how these businesses all work. You know, they'll have their title and escrow companies, or their mortgage companies, or other related services where they're also making business, you know, making profits that, you know, the average flip investor out there doesn't have.
Yeah.
And so they have other ways to go about it. Like we said, they also have much, much deeper pockets and funding sources. You know, one of the things that we have talked about before that sometimes people don't think about is that size, when you've got this much money and you're a public company or you've got, you know, investors that you've got to feed, you have to keep this money moving, mm-hmm. right? You have to show this activity. You cannot let money sit. And so that's tough in an environment where you don't have a lot of inventory. Now, if you and I are out there looking for deals and looking to find stuff to flip, we don't have to buy something. We're not forced to.
Yeah.
But if that's our business and we've got investors that are dumping money into this, or we're public and they want to see this activity and the revenue generated, you're going to push the boundaries because you're like, hey, I've got to keep this money moving. I've got to keep revenue going.
Well, and it's a lot easier in an inventory to find one. It's right. a lot harder in an inventory to say, let's say find 500 to 1,000. Mm-hmm. Like that's a big difference there. Like you have to put a lot into that to really generate that type of movement. So it'll be interesting to see. So one of my questions then, let's mm-hmm. look at this and see. Zillow just pulled out. They just completely said, hey, we don't want any part in this anymore. We're done. We're going to close it down.
Yep.
3-year venture, for the most part, shut down. and they're doubling down on their business. And we can chat about what their focus may be, you know, here in a sec. But does their decision to move out of this market, the iBuyer market, if you want to look hyper-focus it, does that affect Opendoor, OfferPad, Knock, some of these other iBuyer type companies that are out there, Redfin? Yeah. Yep. Is it going to affect it? Is it going to make them second guess what they're doing?
In the long term, no, I don't think it will. I think it might affect how they're doing certain things. And what you see, like I said, is we've been in an environment with extremely low inventory where these companies have to keep purchasing homes. Now, one of the major players is no longer out there. And so that competition just decreased. And so now you've got one less major buyer going after, you know, these amount of homes. Now, what I think is, you know, these iBuyers, regardless of who they are, can't keep doing what they've been doing over the last 6 to 8 months. Does that mean that, you know, we think they'll go away? I definitely don't think so. The iBuyers, in my opinion, they're here to stay. Now, what they've been doing by, you know, overpaying the market value for the last 6 to 8 months, that's going to have to evolve. That was more of a function of, you know, extremely tight inventory and the need to keep money moving and keep deals flowing. It continued to expand for them, what they would buy, what they would pay. You know, 2-3 years ago, Opendoor wasn't doing that, for example.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't giving these way above market values. But over the last 6 to 9 months, we were seeing that.
Well, with heightened appreciation, it makes more sense. The algorithm reported that. It saw what was coming and they took advantage of it. So that being said, that we might see a lot more hands-on approach from Opendoor, OfferPad, these other companies to look at those offers a little bit more diligently.
I will say this, if I had to, so if I had to make a couple predictions here, and this is something we talked about before Zillow pulled out, I definitely didn't think all of them were going to make it in the iBuyer. I wouldn't have guessed necessarily that Zillow would have been the first one to pull out. But especially as the market changes over the next year or two, I don't think Zillow is going to be the only one that pulls out.
No.
I think you're going to see, you know,
or be bought. Consolidation
or,
is also.
Or be bought. I wouldn't be surprised to see some of the ones that are not, you know, where it's not 100% of their main focus, like Zillow, pull out of there. So, you know, someone like a Redfin might pull out of there. You know, that's not 100% of their focus. But when you've got somebody like Opendoor and OfferPad, that's their business. And so I think they're laser focused. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And they're going to stay. Now, I said how they do things will probably change over time. But I do think we'll probably see, you know, some of these other ones, you know, pull out as well. That's possible.
See, I would have thought that Zillow would have been in this game and potentially would have been one of the ones to try and offer and buy one of these other iBuyer programs. Like, I would have thought that they would have shifted that way. I mean, obviously, I was clearly looking in the wrong direction and they went back to what they know. Mm-hmm. But it is going to be interesting to see how this affects the offer process on these other companies.
Yeah.
And I think what's really big, if they start to tone back their offers, what does that mean to, you know, the residential agent that's listing these houses? That fight for, hey, you're going to get a lot more listing your house in the open market starts to widen that gap again. Like, hey, that starts to change.
Look, we always knew and we always know that these things are going to continue to ebb and flow. The market we saw over the last year, you know, and as we've put in our market, you know, predictions going forward in our analysis, like we said, that was unsustainable. That level of appreciation and mania is unsustainable. That does not mean, as we've repeatedly said, that the market's going to be, you know, coming down or that values are going to decrease, but the rate at which it's growing, the appreciation rate is definitely going to be slowing. It couldn't keep up. You know, in Phoenix, we're at 32-33%, you know, year over year appreciation. Yeah. We're not going to see that again. Like, that's crazy. But
enjoy it, homeowners.
Yeah. But what people need to understand is when we say we're not going to see that again, that does not mean prices are coming down. Prices will continue to rise, just not as fast as they have been over the last 12 to 18 months. So as, you know, inventory here slowly increases, you know, we'll see those. And I think that's important here. So a lot of things that people ask is, hey, does Zillow know something that the rest of us don't?
That's the big question.
How is this going to affect the market? And I'll tell you, it's interesting, you know, in the worlds that I'm in out there where, you know, part of it's in the real estate world and part of it is in the larger investment world, if you will, not just in real estate, but with you know, other private investments, Wall Street, and other people on that side. It's interesting to see how the two worlds view this. You've got a lot of people on the real estate side who think, oh, does Zillow know something? And you've got other people on the investment side that are not necessarily, you know, where real estate isn't their primary, going, looking at this a little bit differently because they've seen this before and they've seen other things like this. And I think one of the fallacies that a lot of people make is to assume that because a company is huge and because a company makes a lot of money or is moving a lot of money, that they know better than you, that they have more data. Well, they do have more data, but that they can accurately predict something with that data, that they've got more information, that they, you know, oh, they're seeing something that other people don't see. Sometimes in some industries, that's true. Generally in real estate, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's actually the smaller people that are on the ground in the local markets that see what's happening. They're actually the ones that have the advantage. They've got better information.
It's hyper-focused data.
Absolutely, because the thing you've got to remember is there is no such thing as, quote, the real estate market. You know,
general people, national average.
Yeah, people talk about that. It's like the real estate markets are very local. You've heard me say before, what's happening in, you know, Wichita, Kansas has nothing to do with what's going on in Phoenix, Arizona.
And city-focused, like something we talk about all the time, even just on a hyper-focused market model. Look at Ahwatukee, which really isn't a city, but we talk about that. Like, that moves and fluctuates in ways that sometimes we can't even predict. And then you got like a Gilbert or a Chandler, or you go way out and say, okay, well, what's Santan Valley doing? What's Maricopa doing in difference? Like, these are all hyper markets, even city-based. And if you go even deeper, you could even go zip code-based and community-based. So to package them all together and say, hey, as a country, this, when you see bubble markets and you see markets going the other direction, and then Phoenix is over here just crushing it with the seller market, you can't ball them all together and say, hey, we're all heading in one direction. It just doesn't work.
So, you know, and I think that's the important thing for people to remember out there. You know, if we're looking at Phoenix, like I said, guys, the conditions for a crash here, they're just not here right now. We don't have any inventory. And I mean, look at this Zillow thing. Like we said, what are they selling here? A couple of hundred homes, 2, 3, you know, I don't know, 350, 400 on the high end?
So like 3-4% of our market
of the
that's
going to
get consumed
today,
by real estate agents or other iBuyers. It's not going to, and that was going to be my next question, Pete, is so we've talked about it a little bit. iBuyers have made up close to 10% of our inventory out there, which again,
of the available inventory, yes, right? Which, not sales, yes, but of what's actually available.
And so what we're seeing is that's not a big number, right? So we have about 7,500 active listings currently right now. So you're talking 700 to 750 homes or so of available inventory. And Zillow pulls back. Do you think that these other iBuyer programs is going to consume that and still maintain 10%? Or do you think that puts a little doubt in the consumer's mind to where they start looking at, you know, going more of a traditional model?
I think it's just going to depend on you know, what we're seeing on the market go forward. But I do think that the other iBuyers will consume the vast majority of it. You know, here in the near term,
maintain like a 10% margin. You think,
well,
that's
remember
plausible?
The 10% that we're talking about is active inventory, because these iBuyers, a lot of times their inventory takes a little bit longer to sell.
Yeah.
And so this is the highest we've seen of their inventory. The sales have been, you know, stuff they're actually buying. They've been about half of that, you know, about 5 or 6% of the monthly sales. Now, so on that level of what the iBuyers are out there buying, now that you've got one less large one, yeah, I do think the other ones will consume the vast majority of that. You know, maybe it comes down a little bit, but I think they're going to consume the vast majority of that. And then on the active side, you know, especially as Zillow starts to unwind their stuff, yeah, I also think that number is going to come down as well. But, you know, the Phoenix market here with what we've got inventory wise and, you know, population continuing to grow, economy, you know, I just put out, you know, those numbers from the Phoenix Chamber of Commerce showing that, you know, Phoenix has recovered since April 2020 when the pandemic began. We've recovered almost 103% of our jobs here. So we've actually grown during that time. As people continue to move here, industry continues to grow, jobs continue to grow, and we had a housing shortage before the pandemic. Yeah. So do I think it's a problem here? No, not at all. Like I said, this is going to be easily consumed right now by our market, you know, and I don't think it's going to have much effect on the Phoenix market at all. But as we've mentioned before, real estate is not a national market. There's no national quote real estate market. So are there cities out there that are going to be affected? Yeah, we've said in many of these podcasts, guys, there are not every market, you know, remember, think about it this way. If people are coming here and they're moving to Texas or Florida, you know, Arizona, all these places they're moving, where they're coming from somewhere. There's other places where they're not moving to. And so not every market is going to keep going up. Not every market is going to absorb these. There are markets out there right now that I'm not going to go buy stuff in. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I kind of want to take us back also a little bit to the actual Zillow decision, because, you know, part of me looks at this and says, is there a chance that this is just kind of a basic business 101 type move that they made here, that they looked at what they're doing and their business portfolio and said, hey, and we make these same type of moves, you know, in our business. And we say, when we got our hands in a lot of different things, is having our hands in more than one thing hurting us in our normal business, our actual, like our cornerstone business? And are we going to be more profitable just saying cut ties, go back and go laser focus in our division? And I think looking at what Zillow's been doing, isn't that kind of look a little bit like what they were, what this move might be?
Yeah. I mean, let's not, you know, I certainly don't want to sugarcoat the fact that their iBuyer program, their Zillow offers did not work for them. But what I give, you know, Rich Barton credit for, and even he came out and said it both on Twitter and, you know, in that shareholder letter, is look, this didn't work out the way they thought. Okay. So like you said, this was not their primary business to begin with, or their core competency. This started taking much more, you know, capital and money than they were expecting. It's much more volatile than they were expecting. Things kept taking longer than they were expecting. And so things didn't work out the way they thought they were going to work out. And to his benefit, at least they recognized it. They admitted it. And now they said, okay, so we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to go back to what we are good at.
What we know.
What we know. And so that's providing that front end, you know, user base, experience, right? They've got, what, 200 million plus unique visitors every, something ridiculous. You know, and that was their focus. So, you know, this didn't work. And that's why I say don't sugarcoat it, but at least they recognized it and admitted it. And I give them credit for that, because there's not every company out there would do that. They try to, you know, maybe double down and go, no, we're going to fix it. We're going to keep going. And they said, you know what? We weren't good at that. Let's not do that anymore.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And I think it's going to be interesting going forward to see if Zillow turns another direction and goes in a different path again. Mm-hmm. Maybe they go in a different venture, or did they pull out of this venture so that they could pursue something a little different, you know? And so all of those are, you know, those same questions. Maybe they had a different thought process of their route. And so it'll be interesting to see how this company continues to go forward. And if they just double down on what they're best at and just try and grow that unique visitor count. We've already talked about in the past that when people search for houses, a lot of the times they search Zillow on Google. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. You're not searching for houses available in this city. You're saying, well, Google, take me to Zillow. And it's like, okay, you get to that type of a process where you've built that type of a reputation. People start to coincide, well, I need to find a house, to Zillow. And that's what they've been good at. And it'll be interesting to see what their biggest push, you know, as we come through the market and what they continue to present, how the stock, you know, reacts to a lot of the stuff, and what we're going to see going forward. Yep. Well, obviously, I mean, with big news and seeing something like this, it's not necessarily positive news, but in all reality, in my mind, I think this is positive news for Zillow. I think that they're realizing, like, hey, we have better routes to make the profit that we know we need to make. And in my reality, I think Zillow's making a good move if they've, like you said, recognized that they can do other things better.
Yeah.
And they want to focus on that.
So I think just the last part to leave people with, when we're talking about the overall real estate market, and some people, you know, out there are concerned that this might mean something for the bigger market. For the Phoenix market, the Phoenix metro area, guys, I don't think this is going to have much of an effect at all. For other markets across the country there, you know, it's going to be much more local. The thing to look at is, what's the affordability in some of these cities? You know, what is the local economy and population growth compared to the inventory that they've got there? There is some markets out there across the country where some of that stuff is off, you know, and their real estate market absolutely will be affected as these things start to cool down. But, you know, for our listeners here locally where we're at in the Phoenix metro area, I think we'll be just fine here.
Yeah, we're doing good. So on that note, guys, we'd love to have any of your questions. If you have any more questions about the Zillow process, what happened there, we have a lot of ties and connections to a lot of the iBuyers in the industry. We'd love to be able to answer those, give you insight, give you feedback on all of those questions. Send those to questions at kpeliteaz.com. And like always, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at the KP Elite. And we are excited to come to you guys next time with continual good stories and impactful things that we're seeing in the market.
All right, we'll see you guys next time.